Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Snake Oilers edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. And for those of you who don't know what Snake Oilers is, it's where vendors give us fat stacks of cheddar so that they can come onto the show and pitch their products. So everyone you hear in one of these podcasts paid to be here. So we've got three vendors joining us today. We'll be hearing from Google and, you know, Google Cloud Security. They're going to talk about why you should be using a cloud-based SIEM like theirs. Theirs is called Chronicle, and it's just one of a new generation, a whole new generation of cloud-native SIEMs. Google's Anton Chuvakin will be along later to talk about that. In this edition, we'll also be hearing from the team behind Honeytrace. They've essentially built a web portal where you can throw in your company name and a logo pack, and then they'll give you a whole bunch of like booby-trapped, canary-tokened content for you to put around your network. And they've automated the content and token generation side and the monitoring side as well. So they set that up for you. So basically it's an automation play for deception, but not a dumb one, which is very refreshing in a field that has historically had some dumb stuff in it. So do stick around for that. But first up, we're going to hear from Brian Joe from Fastly. Now, you would remember that some time ago, Fastly acquired a long-term risky business sponsor, Signal Sciences. And it was pretty clear from the get-go what the play would be. They were going to integrate Signal Sciences' WAF technology into the Fastly CDN. It was a transaction, it was an acquisition, it was a deal that made a lot of sense to me because other CDN providers, their WAFs kind of suck, right? Let's be honest. So to be able to get a good one as a check-the-box option with your CDN provider, well, that makes a lot of sense. So Brian Joe is the Director of Security Product Management at Fastly, and he joined me to talk through the thinking around the integration, and here's what he had to say.
One of the things that differentiated us as we got started and certainly as we grew was the ability of our product to deploy anywhere into any kind of infrastructure, whether it's Kubernetes or containers or even at the edge, right, in a cloud-based model. And one of the things that our customers really appreciated about us was that flexibility. Didn't have to get forced into a specific way of doing things, didn't have to use a specific CDN. It was almost a freedom to choose any infrastructure you like. And so,
well, and I remember one thing that actually worked really well for Signal Sciences in the early days is people would move jobs. And because of the flexibility in the way it could be deployed, like they mightn't have been able to, say, deploy an agent directly onto the servers at their new job, which is what they were doing in the old place. So then, you know, they could funnel it through as a proxy or whatever. Like there were just those options, right? And that meant that people were more likely to take the tech with them to their next gig, which I thought was a really cool thing, actually. Anyway.
Yeah, sorry. It was a really great network effect that we had there. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things we're really excited about, and that's why I really love working here, is just our customers love our product and they take it with them wherever they go. So that's been not just rewarding from a product standpoint, but it's certainly good for our pipeline and opportunities. In terms of one of the lessons, though, that we were learning as Signal Sciences is that as we started to get into larger and larger enterprises, what we found is just not all of our prospects and customers had the same level of technical sophistication. So we talk internally a lot about this idea of a tech adoption curve where you have early adopters, early majority, late majority. And what we found is actually the further we got into that adoption curve with our product and technology, we started to see customers ask for less and less complexity. And so we went from this model where we spent a lot of time talking about, hey, deploy us anywhere you want. We go into any of your environments and we work with a single pane of glass, single interface, single policy. And we ran into customers who said, my organization's too big. We have too many departments. I can't control all of them. It's actually better for me if you can just funnel everything through a single choke point, whether it's a CDN or a reverse proxy of some kind. And it's really just a response to, as companies scale, particularly organizationally, right? So we see this in a lot of large enterprises where we have a large media customer, for example, that, as you know, there's been a lot of consolidation in the media industry. So a lot of companies buying one another. And the organizations are thousands of people, and it's so difficult for a security person to wrangle all the different DevOps teams and development teams and tech teams to do things like automate the CI/CD pipeline and include some of the technology that we had. So it was actually a lot easier for many of our customers to just put everything through a single choke point. And one of the things that we started to see actually was, hey, can you just integrate, this is pre-acquisition of Fastly, can you just do integration with the CDN company? Or
I even had this conversation with one of your co-founders once, right? Like before the acquisition, I'm like, why aren't you doing an integration with CDN? And I think at that point, you may have been already talking to Fastly, and he was like, we may have something in the works. And then, a couple months later, the news came out. But and I guess that's the thing, right? It always made sense to kind of do it in the CDN. I mean, if you're a highly sophisticated shop, like we had the CISO from one of your customers, Compass, on the show not too long ago, and they basically built their own giant reverse proxies and just make everyone, all of their dev team, like funnel through them. That was just the way that they chose to do it. But if you're in another big enterprise with lots of departments and lots of different web applications, and you don't necessarily have the people who can stand up that reverse proxy, I mean, being able to just funnel it through your CDN provider, yes, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's certainly a legacy problem as well, where a lot of times in these large enterprises, applications are just running on existing infrastructure. It's not a greenfield situation where you have the opportunity to, say, put all your new applications on this new reverse proxy farm that you're developing. And so it actually just became easier to say, hey, can we build this feature into existing infrastructure or do an integration with the CDN? And so we were heading down in that direction to the point you made about, it started to become obvious as we started to go, as we started to grow and scale and go after larger and larger customers and have more and more success. And so now that we're a part of Fastly, that's been one of the interesting things that we're getting to see up close, where we are getting into these conversations now with some of the largest brands in retail, some of the largest brands in e-commerce, hospitality, media. And we're getting to have really interesting conversations about the volume of traffic that they're pushing through Fastly CDN network, the reason that they're buying Fastly, the emphasis on performance and scale and reach and configurability. And so it makes a lot of sense for us to, when that is actually the biggest problem that you and your company are worried about, sort of massive scale, it starts to change the way that you think about security and actually things like performance and speed and convenience and plugging into existing infrastructure that's already handling terabits of traffic, that actually becomes a lot more valuable.
Okay, so look, why don't we talk about the actual version then, right? The version that is going to be deployed by default. Because Signal Sciences, its big pitch back in the day, and still really, is that you can drop it in full blocking mode and it's really unlikely to break stuff, right? But you notice what I said there, it's unlikely to break stuff. You can't guarantee that it won't. And for most people who are going to be using a WAF product like Signal Sciences, they'll notice, this particular thing in our app, we can carve out an exclusion there or whatever. So there might be a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of a tuning. And even that's an edge case, but that's how Signal Sciences was able to get so popular, is it was very unlikely to break stuff. But I'm guessing that when you've got a version that's being baked into one of the world's largest CDNs, even the possibility of breaking stuff is just like a non-starter, right? So I'm guessing that the version that you're rolling out to the edge of the CDN is going to be a little bit more open and a little bit more forgiving. Is that the case?
So behind the scenes, the technology is going to be the same. It's going to be baked into the Fastly network and come with all of the flexibility and control and reliability that is built into that network, which is all additive and all things that Signal Sciences did not have on its own. In terms of the feature set, we're also having the same feature set as well. So everything that Signal Sciences did pre-acquisition and post-acquisition will be the same. There's not going to be any worse capability if you use the CDN version of the Signal Sciences.
But what about defaults, right? Because I'd imagine, when you go into your default blocking mode, is it a little bit more liberal in the CDN use case?
We're the way we're doing blocking and making decisions is still the same. So if you think about traditional, I think the way to think about it is like distributed decision-making versus centralized, right? And so the thing that made Signal Sciences special is that we actually have both. We had local decision-making at our agent, as well as centralized decision-making in our hybrid cloud backend. And so we had a really clever way of making decisions at multiple levels and passing relevant bits of information between the two levels to make timely decisions at the appropriate place and at the appropriate time.
I mean, I guess really what you're saying, like what's come out of this interview is that, you know, signal sciences is genuinely being integrated into the Fastly CDN, and there's no difference between the product that you get when you run it as an agent or a reverse proxy, or when you just, you know, go into that billing panel or whatever in Fastly and say, yes, I'd like to add WAF.
In terms of the feature set, I think that's absolutely right. Everything that you're able to get with the traditional signal sciences, you'll be able to get in Fastly as well. And if you think about all the other capabilities that Fastly has, you'll be able to get more features. For example, something like DDoS, right? That's built into a CDN with, you know, over 100 terabits of egress capacity. That's just additive to what you would have if you were just doing agents. So there's certainly going to be more things that you get if you get the integrated version. And I think from a customer experience standpoint, though, it's actually going to be a lot easier in terms of the amount of friction. So instead of having to deploy a new agent or do some automation in your CI/CD pipeline, it's really just going to be push a button, or I think as you mentioned earlier, check a box in your experience, and we can automatically deploy the signal science, the full signal science security to any user on the Fastly network.
And so I did notice you blanch there a little when I said it's just the same, because, you know, don't worry, I know that the engineering challenge of getting this to work on a CDN would have been substantial, right? And nobody's going to care. They're just like, I checked the box and now it's the same as before. But I'm guessing a lot of hours went into that.
Yeah, it was definitely a significant work. What we've had to do is really spend a lot of time refactoring the decision-making model. So it's not just like we're taking a static library that was running in one place and putting it in another place. We're actually rebuilding an entire data analysis circuit and loop that makes us essentially that distributed decision-making model, where we have hybrid cloud decision-making distributed all the way to all the individual nodes and agents that we have running at the edge.
Yeah. No, there was, I'm guessing there was a bit of work there. All right, Brian Joe, thank you so much for joining us on Snake Oilers to give us your pitch for the new integrated, Fastly Signal Sciences combo. Obviously, this is something we've been expecting to come down the pipe, and it's great to get some detail on that. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Patrick, for having me.
That was Brian Joe there with a chat about Fastly integrating Signal Sciences, its WAF, into the Fastly CDN. Big thanks to him for that. And I've dropped a link to the Fastly WAF page into this week's show notes if you'd like to read more about it. It is time for our next Snake Oiler now, and we're chatting with the Australian team behind Honeytrace. Honeytrace is actually a product made by two companies, Pen10 and WorldStack. Now, the original idea behind Honeytrace is they'd do a bunch of machine learning on your corporate documents and then use that ML to generate a bunch of fake but authentic looking material that would be full of canaries. You know, you'd then take that material and seed it around your network and use that as a detection mechanism. So if that material leaked out, it would beacon. But they realized they'd been overthinking it. Now the product is simpler. Now they just have like a corpus of content, but customers can sort of customize it with logos and company names and things like that. Which just makes the whole thing a lot easier. Like, you don't need that machine learning piece to train it on real corporate data, which was a bit of a sticking point for them. So it makes sense they've gone this way. But they still automate the canary generation and the subsequent monitoring, which is, you know, that's the part where they add the most value. So this seems like an improvement to the business. Ben Whittam is from Pen10 and Dan Holman is from WorldStack, are the two companies behind Honeytrace, and they both joined me to talk through it. The first voice you'll hear is Pen10's Ben Whittam. Here they are.
So we have this wonderful concept from Haroon with the Thinks Canary. Everyone loves that stuff, right? The canary tokens. And what we do with Honeytrace is extend that, essentially. So we're creating the content for you, so you don't have to go about and decide what it is you're going to place inside that environment. We build that all for you. And secondly, we extend the different detection mechanisms that you use, so you're not just relying on beacons. So we pair that with open source internet searching and dark web searching. So firstly, let's talk about the content generation. So when you're creating some content that you want to place out there, you've got the choice of either making something that is, you know, real, as in you're using something that you're actually, you know, thinks important, or you have to go about the process of building it. And content is really key in this, because ultimately with digital watermarks and tripwires, you want somebody to interact with it, because that way you know that they're actually on your network, right? So you need to make something that actually has a perceived level of value. Now, the challenge is you go up to your CISO and you say, hey, or your CEO, and say, I'm going to use the real data here, and I'm going to use that as the seed. And, you know, they're going to have some conniptions through this process. So what we're doing with Honeytrace is that we just build this content for you. And I'm talking about, you know, pay slips, contracts.
Because we spoke about this years ago, and the whole idea was to basically use some really simple ML to just generate a bunch of documents that look legit to attackers, but are actually just kind of, you know, not.
So our original concept that we had was about learning about your data and building it based on that. But we've found actually that what people really want is to go to a portal, have most of that stuff already learnt for
download
you.
Download a giant tarball of stuff that looks legit, stuff because everyone's account files, they're all going to look the same sitting there in the directory, and when people are grepping for them, is that pretty much it?
That's it. But what we do with Honeytrace is allow you to customize that, so you can drop your own logos in there. We can generate some.
That's actually a cool idea. You bring a logo pack and your company name, drop it in, and then it spits out a whole bunch of shit that looks genuine but isn't, and is full of tokens.
So you don't need you don't even need to bring your own. We can roll some for you, because things like invoices, they don't come from you, right? They come from somebody else. So we drop in the fake logos and the business names and all the things you might have bought or didn't buy through that process, and allows you to customize. So you can add your own email address in there, or we can build one for you. The other thing we do is we extend that concept of beacon detection as well. And so when we drop in an email address, for instance, in these documents, or just using it on its own, we create the domain and the email account as well on the internet. And so we look for interactions with that as well. So that way there's more chances that somebody is going to,
there are canary token emails, right? And even domain name lookups and things like that. Mm. But I guess, you know, automating that process makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And with our technology, you can drop your Thinx Canary already in there, or we've already got it already integrated. So you can just click on it and it's loaded up as well. We're just trying to bring that all together, because really all these socks are doing it, but it's run by some guy or girl that's in the back corner that may or may not be there in 2 months' time, that's either got it in their head or
running
it on some spreadsheet, right?
This is such a security thing in general. Like, I know of the wheels falling off at places because, you know, a team of two people has been running, you know, wrangling some really unwieldy thing. Right? In an organization, they've been running it for like 8 years, and then they both leave and no one knows how to run it anymore. And
That's exactly right. And when you're building fake things, right, which actually you need to know where they are, you know, you want some central repository where there's some point of knowledge about it. And when a document is found on the internet or found somewhere, you want to go back to the place where it was originally created. And You're spot on. Somebody's probably done that in the back room, you know, and saved it on some drive somewhere that no one can find 5 years later, where invariably these spills occur, and trying to dig up all of that. So Honeytrace is about, you know, bringing that all in together and making it easy.
And so the way we've gone about it. Daniel Holman's here as well. And this is something I didn't know prior to today's interview, but Honeytrace was actually developed by two companies, Penten and WorldStack. So Dan is from WorldStack. So Daniel, I understand that WorldStack works more on the search side of this in terms of discovering, these documents that do contain beacons once they are published somewhere, either onto the open web or dark web. So, I'm guessing this is, you know, this type of search was already the specialty of WorldStack.
So WorldStack's been around for about 7 years. We specialize in open source intelligence, building solutions that use that sort of intelligence. So we've developed a product called the WorldStack Engine, and that's what's actually running in the background behind Honeytrace to do all this searching.
Can you walk us through a case study of where some of this stuff has turned up?
Yeah, certainly. So I guess before we created the Honeytrace platform, we were already doing data loss detection as a service for customers. So we would get called in after a data breach to have a look around and see if that data had actually appeared anywhere else. It's a common thing that not a lot of incident response teams do, but I think should, in terms of once you've cleaned up the incident, how do you know that that data is not somewhere else? How do you know that it's all been deleted and you found every instance of it? And in a lot of cases, we found copies of the data in other places on the internet, in paste sites, in the dark web for sale, for example. So we were already doing this kind of a service for customers, but usually using real data. So they'd give us some set of the data that was breached so that we can then do searches on it and see if we can find matches elsewhere. But we ended up having a conversation with Ben actually, and he was talking about what he was doing and I was explaining what we were doing, and he said, oh, I wonder if you could join these two things together and have these fake documents with tokens and watermarks. And those watermarks is just like that real data that I was talking about. So that's the thing, that metadata that allows us to have something to look for. And so, yeah, I guess that our WealthSec engine searches web, search engines, social media, and dark web. And we've got a quite a sophisticated data scraping system there that is constantly monitoring all those data sources for all these honey tokens.
Now, back to you, Ben, for a moment. Obviously, you're generating all of this content, but you don't really want that content to be where your real content is, because that would sort of defeat the whole purpose of this thing, because attackers would just steal your real content as well as your fake content. You want them to be able to steal this stuff more easily without making it look trivial. So why don't you tell us a little bit more, like, as a customer, they want to use this approach, they want to get that content into their environment. What does that look like? You said that there's a portal where they can generate this stuff. And then what? They just take that and start unzipping it into random folders, or do you have a guide, or how does it work?
Yeah, you've nailed it. So basically, it's a web portal. You create your tokens through that process. You download them, and then you activate detectors. You know, there could be search, or it could be other types of detectors through that process, and away you go. Now, as you rightfully mentioned, you need to make smart choices about where you place these things, and we see a number of different scenarios from customers, and we don't try and define what they can and can't do in this space, but typically there'll be two pathways. One is that they want to use them as a watermark. In that case, they want to place them in amongst the real data and allows them to just focus on searching for that watermark as a method of detection, because when you've got a million documents, it's a really difficult process to watch all of those million documents, but it's much easier to focus on the watermark. The second is about, you know, that concept of, trapping things. And you want to place, when you're hunting rats, you want to place the rat bait in a location that the cats and dogs aren't going to get to. So you want to be smart about where you place those things so you can minimize the accidental interactions with them. But they're different strategies, and we don't like to define.
Okay, Ben Whittam, Daniel Holman, thank you so much for joining us on Snake Oilers to walk through Honeytrace. And I'll look forward to the general launch. Cheers.
Thanks.
It was great to be here.
That was Ben Whittam and Dan Holman there talking about Honeytrace, and you can find them at honeytrace.io. The product is in beta, but they're looking for the right types of organizations to get involved, so head over there and drop them a note. There is a link, of course, in the show notes. It is time for our third and final Snake Oiler now, and we're speaking with Anton Chuvakin, who is responsible for security solution strategy at Google Cloud. Last time we had him on, Anton talked about zero trust stuff, that stuff that they're doing at Google, but this time he's talking about Chronicle, Google's cloud-based SIEM. And really what this interview is about is the concept of cloud-based SIEMs. It's taken a long time for them to actually eventuate and become a viable option, but now they're absolutely a thing. Here's Google's Anton Chuvakin.
So one thing to start is kind of to separate Cloud SIEM from like people buying a license for software and deploying it in their own cloud. So just today I was talking to somebody who says, we have this software SIEM and we call it a Cloud SIEM because we deployed it in our GCP account on our own. So you can buy a license for software SIEM built in, you know, circa 1998 or 2007 and deploy it in the cloud. Like, it may work. So there's a degree of that going on. And there's also a degree of vendors who kind of do that on the back end. They kind of deploy their software for you in their little flooded basements, and they call it a Cloud SIEM. So to me, Cloud SIEM is more about the cloud native SIEM, which was built in the cloud, and not a SIEM that is a kind of a cloud tourist. So frankly, some clients would be kind of okay with a cloud tourist SIEM, a SIEM that just like came to the cloud and was deployed there.
Cloud tourist is funny terminology. I mean, we would call them, and it's a sweet burn, but we would call them legacy cloud.
Legacy cloud. Sometimes in my Gartner days, I called them fake cloud, but they are deployed in the real cloud, but the tool itself is very much pre-cloud.
Yeah.
So some customers say, frankly, if you are running it for me and not me, I'm good with that. I get the advantages. So maybe fake cloud is too offensive because ultimately it delivers value. If I do not want to be in the business of running a SIEM in my data center and you would take it from my hands, I'll pay you. That's fine. Whether you do real cloud or not, I don't care. I care that I'm not running it. So there's that. But there are also people who say, wait a second, if I use a G Suite and I'm trying to edit a doc, Google doesn't tell me, wait, it's a big doc, we need to buy more servers. That's not what happens. You just have capacity.
Yeah.
So if you are doing a cloud native SIEM and you are sending a 1,000 EPS, and then next day you send 1 million EPS, it is supposed to just work. You're not supposed to get a call from support saying, wait, we need to increase capacity. That's not how cloud works. So to
you don't have to trust you don't have to trust your outsource provider to run all the latest Apache patches and all of that sort of stuff as well, right? Like that's kind of baseline for cloud native stuff.
Correct. You're not supposed to do any maintenance, and the maintenance is supposed to be done magically in a low toil manner without manual work, because manual work is cost for you. Mm. If you have some kind of a non-cloudy cloud and you run my SIEM for me, but you do it inefficiently, you charge me money, and I don't want to pay money. I want to pay, you know, Chronicle per employee, not per gigabyte, because I don't want to pay for your ineffective maintenance. So that's kind of a funny aside, is that it kind of mixes economics and technology.
But I mean, it seems clear that from this point forward, cloud SIEM is kind of the future. I mean, that's not to say that regular SIEM is dead. I mean, that's got a long way to play out. But if you're doing greenfields now, chances are you're going to be going online for this stuff. Why has it taken so long for us to get to the point where that's kind of the norm? I mean, I guess some of the early arguments against this sort of thing would be like, well, what if your network gets interrupted? You know, what happens to your event logs? But I guess, you know, we've just sort of moved beyond that these days, haven't we?
Yes, but frankly, even in the past, as I was answering, I was looking for my Gartner blog post from something like 2014, perhaps, when I said, why is there no SaaS SIEM? And I was surprised, because frankly, some of the things like reliable bandwidth, more or less robust cloud computing, they were there for a while. So why didn't we have SaaS SIEM earlier? So this to me is a fascinating question. For some security subsegments, you know, email security, vulnerability scanning, they migrated to the cloud, to SaaS delivery quite a bit earlier. SIEM, there were some attempts, but ultimately only starting 2019 when we launched, Chronicle launched, Sentinel launched, some others. That's where it became kind of a clear option that you can buy a software as a service or cloud native SIEM from somebody. It took a while. And frankly, I've been psychoanalyzing those reasons for some time. I don't know exactly why SIEM was behind. I think it's a data volume and doing it cost effectively. Because if you deploy a free text indexer, I'm not going to name other vendor names. So you deploy some kind of a text search in your GCP or Amazon account, and you then load security data, you may face a pretty sizable cloud bill, even though you're paying nothing for software. For the text search. So cloud SIEM done naively is a big cost. And so some people do not just like jam petabytes into search indexers and hope for the best, because then you're going to get a bill from a cloud provider.
There's risk. There's sort of unpredictability there. Yeah, no, I'm with you. It makes sense. Yeah. And also, you know, we got to remember too that the sort of on-prem SIEM market is more or less locked up by like two or three vendors as well.
True, but guess what? Most of them are journeying to the cloud. So kind of back to the cloud tourist angle. So some of the on-premise, actually most of the on-premise vendors are building some form of SaaS or cloud, not cloud native, but kind of cloud evolving SIEM. I don't know.
Cloud friendly.
One of the, somebody at GCP said cloud focused, but to me cloud focused is just somewhat different. So cloud friendly, correct. That it's not native, but not a tourist. So to me, the fact that they are moving there indicates that their clients finally started pushing them there. And if you just have an appliance SIEM and you look at the calendar and it's 2022 and all you have is an appliance SIEM, I'm sorry, but you're going to die.
Yeah. Well, and even if it's just an image, you know, even if it's just like a Kubernetes thing, you know, like that's not really much better than an appliance. It's the 2021 equivalent of an appliance, really, isn't it?
True. I mean, you from a container application to a true cloud scale solution, there's a long journey. I mean, you can walk the journey, it's doable. But to me, the fact that we are built and some of our competitors are built in the cloud, for the cloud, and sometimes by the cloud provider, like us and, of course, our friends at Microsoft, to me, this indicates that this what gives us a way to use the intelligence, use the cloud scale, use the cloud cost advantage, and use other advantages that's perhaps much harder to do if you are sort of like pushing your software to the cloud.
Mm. Now, look, when you launched, as Chronicle back in 2019, there was fanfare. You actually launched that. That product was launched on this podcast, which was a real coup for us and you know, good vibes all around. But, you know, one of the criticisms at the time, like generally it was well received, but one of the criticisms was like it didn't support enough types of logs, right? So I'm guessing that it's been a focus of yours over the last couple of years just to keep adding support, adding functionality, adding different views, adding different searches, all of that. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. And I sometimes, when people ask me about some kind of magical shortcut to doing more device support, I kind of tell them, sorry, but in my mind, and that my first job at a SIM vendor was doing device integration lab in 2002. So I told them, I tell people, it's like a door-to-door fighting. You capture one house, you have to fight for the next one. There's no shortcuts. You support 10 log sources to do 20, you have to do double the work. There's very little efficiency of scale once you support 100, because the next 100 may be different. So we've been chewing through log sources, but here's the clincher. We had some log sources that very few SIMs had, and very few SIMs could support economically. We had DNS and DHCP from day one. We had many EDR data sources from day one. And while other SIMs can support EDR telemetry, usually that's very voluminous, so they struggle. So to me, we are definitely catching up with the overall big fat list of log sources, but we also have some advantages. We can take high volume stuff and not struggle.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm guessing you're taking stuff like Zeek feeds and whatnot, right?
Yeah, Zeek is one of the popular data sources. I was just coming off the webinar we did with CoreLight about how to use Chronicle backend for network analytics. So we sort of have this type of NDR kind of thing going where they provide the sensors and some detection. We provide enrichment, detection, retention, hunting support. So we are the backend for Zeek data. So that's a good advantage. And it's not something that every other SIM does. And it's not something almost any SIM does cost effectively.
Well, I mean, once you've got DNS, DHCP, Zeek, and EDR, like that's most of it, really, when you think about it.
No, they're classic log sources. There are Windows logs.
Many other server logs and whatnot. Yeah, of course. But you know what I mean,
and
right?
DHCP logs. For sure. You're in a good shape. And then, of course, now we are also having a separate push on supporting GCP log sources with one click so that we can gain some advantages. People sort of assume that because we are a GCP product, we run on Google Cloud and we have great support for only Google Cloud. That's actually false. We have decent support for Google Cloud, but we have great support for other log sources. We are not a Google Cloud-focused solution. We are solution-focused on where the customers are. They're in Google Cloud? Great. They want to get us some Office 365 logs? That's great. I think we supported them before we supported G Suite, which is kind of funny, but in retrospect.
Yeah. And now, of course, you know, logging is, I mean, you're actually kind of the logging guy, right? Like I remember something like 10 years ago, I was at a conference in the Netherlands, the GovCert conference. Hi to all of those people. If they're listening, they hosted me over there a few times, actually. And it was wonderful. And they said, you've got to talk to Anton Chuvakin about logging. They're like, this guy is like Mr. Logging. So, I mean, this must feel very much like your, you know, in a lot of ways, your input on this product must feel like a bit of a dream job as someone who's been, you know, banging on about logs for 10 years.
Well, yes, 10 years. I mean, I'm going to cry, but it's been almost 20 at this point.
Yeah,
You know, funny enough, I wrote a book on log management, which some people offensively call a book about SIM. And I say, no. I did not write a book about
this
SIM.
This was pretty much the conversation we had 10 years ago where you're like, logging is not SIM. Logging is logging. But I mean, you know, SIM is about doing stuff with those logs, right? And I think the points that you were making 10 years ago were all very good. I found that an interesting interview. I still remember it, which is that people just don't like put enough thought into logging. And, you know, it is very much related to what you can do with the SIM, what you're doing with your logging.
Correct. And now we have this whole observability movement and sort of the cool kids tell us, hey, if I get logs, we're going to do observability. And I'm like, dude, observability is like a app logs from inside the app. I mean, ultimately, they are very log-like in nature. They're different and they come from different sources. But if you talk observability, I'm going to talk logging back to you.
Yeah. Okay. So we've sort of been talking about what you've been up to the last couple of years. But where is it going? What's the plan? What's the roadmap?
So here's the interesting one. Today, Chronicle exists as a SIM replacement for some people. So we take over what their SIM does. Sometimes we also exist alongside their SIM, what we call an augment use case. To me, the near future is this would persist. For some clients, Chronicle is their SIM. And that's okay. We're happy to support you. We're going to build more things. For other clients, Chronicle is kind of an add-on to their SIEM. They may think of us as XDR or something else, but they have a SIEM, they have Chronicle, they're using them together happily. In the future, we certainly want to capture more of the broad security operations use cases. We have a SOC transformation practice going, so we sort of have people learn some things we learned, such as from how Google SOC operates. We launched a solution focused on improving security operations called ASO, Autonomic Security Operation. So Chronicle to me would be a part of that story, not just here's a tool that's cheap and does fast searches. Guess what? It's by Google. It better have fast searches. But it does more than that. It gives you a bigger frame around security operations transformation.
All right, Anton Shuvakin, thank you very much for joining us on the show to have a talk through all of that. That was very interesting.
Perfect. Thank you.
That was Anton Shuvakin there from Google Cloud. Big thanks to him for that, and huge thanks to all of our Snake Oilers for participating in this podcast. If you'd like to find out more about any of the stuff you've heard about, head over to our website and check out the show notes for this episode, and you'll find links to the relevant pages. But that is it for this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back next week with more security news and analysis. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.